I know some of you know this story, but most of you don't know this story, that when I started up Harmony Fellowship in my home about 8 years ago, that I think I closed like middle of May, and we were planning on having our first service at the home the beginning of June. So I had all kinds of workers in there painting and fixing things up and refinishing floors and doing all these things, but there was somebody who was part of Harmony Fellowship at the time because he had the free time. He was semi-retired, and he loved to tinker, so he did all the handyman work with me. And so we were constantly running off to different hardware stores, Home Depot, Lowe's. I mean, they knew me all the time. It's like, oh, she's back. What does she need now? So it was just like constantly running there. And it was just such a gift to have somebody who would take care of stuff with me. But one of the things he did, besides helping me, he always had these other products that he was selling. Sometimes it was kitchen re-cabinet, you know, putting new cabinets on old cabinet doors on old cabinets. So he was doing that. He was always selling home improvements. But one of the things he sold was an item called a sole. It was very interesting. It just stuck to the bottom of your foot. There was no top to it, no side to it. It just stuck to the bottom of your foot. And I said, who wants that? And he said, girls who want a complete tan on the top of their foot. I said, oh, I see. That's interesting. But because he believes so strongly in his product, he wore his product everywhere. There was one caveat. You cannot get these immersed in water. Because if you do, they will no longer stick to the bottom of your foot. So he gave me a pair, and I looked at them, and I put them aside. But he wore his. And so one day, we went to Lowe's to buy some more hardware. And while we were inside, the skies opened up. And we ran to the car, and we made it in. We drove home, and it poured, just an incredible downpour. And then when we pulled up in front of the house on Bancroft, he stepped out, and it was just like a river going down the side of my house, you know, just down the street. And so he stepped out, and off came his soul. And I found myself running down the street, saying, I'll save your soul. And I really had to run to the entire block because this was a river and I'm trying to run with the soul. And finally I got to the end and I scooped up his soul. I saved your soul. And it was like such a great joke. You know, it was such a great thing to be able to say, I know for sure I saved somebody's soul. Amen. Let's have an amen with that. So it was interesting, though, because I thought about what a great jokester, whatever this is, spirit, God, universe, whatever this is, what a great jokester, what great timing, what made that come about? What did it take for that joke to actually have its punchline? And it took stories of being worthless sinners, of having souls that could actually have black marks on them, of like having to go to hell and possibly being saved in heaven, of people believing they could go door to door and help save souls. It took all of that story to have that funny thing happen in my life. But it also took something else. It took me saying yes to my life, to saying, yes, I'm going to stop design. I'm just going to start doing this. I don't know who's going to show up. I'm going to buy this house. I'm going to buy all these chairs. I don't know who's going to show up. It took me saying yes, 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 and just trusting that the beginning of June, people would start coming into the home, and that was really a great and wonderful moment in my life to be able to laugh about that. And the laughter at Harmony Fellowship has never stopped. I love it. As soon as we walk in, I hear people laughing all the time. And I really, truly believe if you want to find God, follow the laughter. Follow the laughter. We spend so much attention on the down moments of our lives and other people's lives, and we're kind of like, oh, that's who we have to worry about. Those people are laughing. They're fine. This is who we have to worry about over here. And on some level, that's true. We should have compassion for people. But for the person who can never, ever laugh at themselves or at life, it is like that wagon wheel that, you know, every pebble it hits, it hurts. It doesn't see the humor in it. It doesn't say, oh my gosh, it is pouring down rain. This is horrible. It says, no, it's a cloudy day. The skies have opened up. There's a soul going down my street, and I'm going to run after it and save it. Those are two different people. Like, there goes your soul. It's over now. Those are two different people. And I have the option at any time to be either one of them. And I love that that's kind of how we find our tribe. That's how we find out who we're supposed to be with, is who will play. Who will play? Who will laugh with you? We need people to laugh with. And that sounds superfluous, but it's really not. Because God, creative energy, whatever you want to call it, is, we say, in everything, everywhere. And that means every cell of our body and every strand of DNA. And that's why studies show that when somebody is laughing or in joy or in love, there's an expansiveness and the DNA strands actually expand. And that when we are in fear and anger and guilt, that they actually contract. And that is why when somebody is going through a physical thing, it is really good to be around those that are positive, upbeat, and make you laugh. And it's good to watch movies that make you laugh. You are actually healing the body and expanding it and giving it more of what it needs. When we are in guilt and fear, et cetera, we actually start contracting not just our DNA, our breathing. Well, notice we don't breathe right. We have very shallow breathing now. That's a lack of oxygen. We're beginning to deprive ourselves. So I think the reason that the title of the talk is Laughing Matters, we think of it, well, that's a laughing matter, and that's not a laughing matter. But what we want to talk about, does laughing really matter? Is it important? And it really and truly is. It's our guidepost as to where we've arrived at the right place, the right work, the right people, the right relationships, the right church, the right everything. And it tells us if they laugh at what we laugh at, that they get us. That's the quickest way to find out, do we get each other? Is if we find ourselves laughing about the same thing. And the other good thing about laughter, it has absolutely no dialect. So no matter where you're at, whatever country, whatever language they speak, their laughter sounds the same. It doesn't have a dialect. It's universal. And whatever is true for one and is true for all, I would say is true of God. There's no distinction at all in laughter. I love the fact that I can be downstairs at fellowship and Norma Sue over there will be upset because somebody accidentally threw away her cup of coffee, and I can like offer all kinds of goodies, and she, no, I don't want that, I don't want that, I want that. How about some whipped cream? And she lights up. And all of a sudden everybody got really quiet in the kitchen. I said, open your mouth. And I filled her mouth up with whipped cream, and doggone it, she wasn't upset at all anymore. And I thought, you know, that's so cool. That's one of my people. That's one of my people. And so yesterday, I was talking to Harry on the phone, and I had decided for a long time, I would love to live on Grants Trail. I ride the bike trail all the time. I'd like to just might as well live there. You know, make my life easier. Get rid of this house. We're not in there anymore except for concerts, and go on the bike trail. So I decide I'm going to do it. I'm call the agent. I'm going to write a contract. She calls me back. Sorry, somebody put a contract in yesterday. But I'd already put a call into Harry earlier saying, my friend is concerned about those big electrical poles that are right along the path there. He's afraid of the electromagnetic field, just as John is up here. Have no fear. So because he's an electrical engineer, he said, I'll go check that out for you. I'll go look at it. I've got a meter. I don't know if it's calibrated right. I don't know if it's going to tell you anything, but I'll go there. So he goes there and he tells me, I'm out here now. And he goes, and it looks like it's pretty normal. And I said, well, you know, actually, somebody else has already put a contract in on the place. He goes, I've got this big white suit where all you can see is my face. If I put that on and I go out there with the meter, I said, yes, do that. And look over your shoulder as if you're in fear and run for your car. And let's get this thing reversed. But I mean, the fact that we could immediately start joking about it was such a delight. Because we want people that we can just immediately take any situation and turn a corner with laughter. And then remember, there's infinite possibilities. There's not one place. Other things will open up. He's going back today. And wearing the whole thing. So, I mean, so we had a concert in my backyard last week, and it was just wonderful. And afterwards, because musicians, right after they do a concert, it's hard for them to unwind, we found some of us in a circle, just sitting there, singing songs. And I don't remember what song it was, but one of them just cracked me up. I could not stop thinking about how crazy this is that these silly people are in my backyard singing this silly song. But it was wonderful, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And then one of them introduces the song from West Side Story about the Jets, and instantly everybody leans in and starts snapping. And I thought, this is so great. This is what life's about. It's about those joyful moments, and that there really is, if you a connection with God, it really breaks you open. Like we say, she really breaks me up. It means we're breaking each other open. We even use the language that talks about us opening up when we laugh. And when we were children, we laughed all the time. But as we got older, we got so serious about everything. So in contrast to all that laughter, I had some man call me last night on a Saturday night. And I was driving my car and he wanted to ask me all the questions. He didn't want to ask me anything, really. He wanted to tell me everything. And so he was telling me how he had come from a traditional background and how he had now studied Christian science and divine science and unity and religious science. And he was doing a comparison of all of them. And he wanted to know, you know, is it okay not to believe in hell and salvation? I said, well, if you don't believe in hell, then you don't have to worry about salvation. They kind of go hand in hand, you know? You don't need one without the other one. So if you don't believe in hell, and the story doesn't make sense that a loving creator or creative energy exists, why would it also create something to punish its own creation when it could just, whoop, you're gone? It didn't make any sense. So he said, well, what about this? And what about people who believe that? I said, it doesn't matter what other people believe. What comes down to is, what do you believe? He said, well, I've even looked into paganism. I said, that's great. He goes, you think that's great? I said, sure. He goes, you mean it's okay, like, if people are atheist? And I said, sure. I was saying all the stuff that he was not expecting me to say. I said, you know what, Steve? It doesn't matter what you believe. It's what you do here. It's what you bring here. So a lot of people have studied a lot of books, and they become scholars. And they try to figure out God, and they try to put God in a box. And that box has a time limit on it. It's called the beginning and the end. But we're trying to define something that has no beginning and end. And that's expressing uniquely as you. And as long as you express who you are, that's all that matters. And what that means is, as long as you follow the joy in your heart, whatever gives you joy and energizes you, you are now in God. And whenever you choose to make yourself do things that you really dislike, you're outside of it. You feel yourself shutting down. You can feel those strands of your DNA contracting. I didn't say all that to him. I'm talking to you about this now. That would have, like, whoa. But he wanted permission from somebody to say it's okay no matter what, and to stop looking at everybody else and saying, but that's terrible, they're so tied to dogma. I said, yes, even in new thought, it can become very dogmatic. But the truth is, it's what do you believe and what do you live and how do you feel while you're here? And what are you leaving behind? And if what we leave behind is laughter and our talents and the good that we brought forth and that somebody felt warm and fuzzy around us, that's as good as it gets, really. That's what we're supposed to bring to the table, not argue and fight over who's right, who's got the right picture on who God is. Because God is uniquely expressing as us. And you can't really do it wrong. So the laughter we're talking about that matters is not laughter that makes fun of other people, but laughter that is genuine, that is spontaneous, because God is genuine, authentic, and spontaneous. The timing of God is perfect. It took that whole story of all this stuff to come to a perfect moment without having those stories, even of heaven and hell and saving souls. There's no way that that story could be interesting to me. What a setup. Do you ever like start to tell a joke and you've got a setup and you blow it? What timing? So many people actually have a talent to do that. We have Johnny Carson, who followed his heart, used his talents. His dad never watched his show, never approved of what he did. But look at the laughter he left behind. And he pushed past that and did what he loved and what he had a talent to do. Gilda Radner was able to laugh as she went through cancer and chemotherapy at the whole process and watching herself going through the process. It's a great healing energy. I remember when my brother was dying, he had lung cancer, and we were at the hospital, and he wanted us to come in individually, and he would say goodbye to us, which we all did, and then we'd go back out. And he was waiting for his one daughter to drive up from Tulsa, Oklahoma, or somewhere. And so she finally got there, and the doctors were saying, he can't last much longer. His heart is running as if he's running a marathon. He can't last much longer. But he wanted to stay alive for her until she got there. And she did get there. And he said goodbye to her and told her how much he loved her, and then she came out. And then his wife came out and said, Dick wants all of you to come in. So we all came and we stood around his bed and we waited. And finally my brother, who was always the jokester, said, I have no idea how long this is supposed to take. And we all laughed because we realized we wouldn't know either. It was a universal thing. We don't know how long these things take. We watch too many movies. The person says their final words and they're gone. But that's not how it works. It works when whoever is supposed to work out whatever they need to work out with him, and they may not even talk to him about it. It's that kind of timing is going on for them. So after we stood there for a while, he said, I think it'd be better if you all went out. And we did. We were all very sad again. And the next thing you know, his wife pokes her head out. He wants you back in. So we kept doing this in-out thing. And he lasted like another 2 weeks. And a priest kept coming in saying, you need to go away. You people are here 24/7 on shifts. You need to go away. I took the priest out in the hall and I fired him. I said, you are never to come back here again. My nephew just got a kick out of that because he was studying to be a priest. He just thought that was the funniest thing, that his aunt had just fired this priest. It's wonderful that we can have this thing called laughter, that we have this whole paint box full of feelings. and that we really appreciate our laughter, especially after we've been in a down moment. That we actually need the contrast. It's really good. But a whole life sent through anger and fear and guilt sent out into the world is going to come back to us as poor health and a poor mind and poor relationships and poor jobs. Nothing bad has happened. It's just letting us know that what we're sending out is going to come right back to us. We can lighten up about this. We can remember, as that affirmation said, who we really are isn't hurt or harmed by anything that happens here. We can learn to laugh at ourselves. We can watch ourselves when we go through a pattern of thinking where we obsess over it. Does anybody else obsess or is it just me? Excuse me, I had to go kill somebody right over here. I do, you know, I'll catch myself. There you go, you're doing that obsessive thing again. When we can watch ourselves, we can start laughing at ourselves again. So I really want us to think about this because I don't think we talk about this very much. And I know there's places where you can take these seminars where you sit around and laugh, 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 you know. I know that's that. But wouldn't it be better just to have a life where you do that? Where we incorporate it, where we integrate it, where we integrate God into our lives and understand that we are all part of his wonderful, magnificent laughter, that it's in the birds, it's in the babble of the brook, it's in the music, it's everywhere, it's in the wind. We are living in God's laughter, and we wake up and we recognize it. Thank you.